Welcome back, everybody, to another deep dive. This time we're exploring the Bhagavad Gita, and more specifically, Chapter 4, Jnana, Karma, Sannyasa, Yoga.
Yeah.
We've got a great academic paper here to help us unpack some of the ideas, and I think this is going to be a really fun one.
It is a pivotal chapter, you know,
right
in the heart of the Gita. It lays out this dynamic trio, spiritual wisdom, or Jnana, the discipline of action, which is karma, and the path of renunciation, Sannyasa.
You had me a dynamic trio. All right, so we're talking ancient wisdom here, thousands of years old, but I have a feeling this isn't just going to be some dusty philosophical treatise.
Right.
What makes this chapter so relevant to us today?
Well, the Gita in this chapter particularly is all about grappling with life's big questions.
Oh.
How do we act in a world full of chaos and conflict? What is the relationship between knowledge and action? And how can we find true inner peace? These are questions that people have been asking for centuries, and the Gita offers some surprisingly practical answers.
Okay, I'm hooked.
I'm ready.
Let's start with this idea of spiritual wisdom, or jnana.
Okay.
The paper talks about it as a transformative force. How is this different from just knowing a bunch of facts?
So think of it like this. Imagine you're trying to navigate a new city with just a basic map.
Okay.
You might get lost, miss important landmarks, or take unnecessary detours, but with a detailed GPS, your journey becomes much smoother, more efficient, and ultimately more enjoyable.
So spiritual wisdom is like that GPS. It helps us navigate the complexities of life with more clarity and purpose.
Exactly. The Gita suggests that this wisdom isn't just intellectual, it's experiential.
Okay.
It dissolves the ignorance that, according to the text, is the root of our suffering.
Okay.
It helps us see ourselves and the world around us more clearly, which leads to more fulfilling choices and a deeper inner peace.
That makes sense. Now, the paper also mentions this concept of the eternal self, the Atman. How does that tie into spiritual wisdom?
This is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
The Gita distinguishes between our temporary self, the one caught up in desires and fleeting emotions, and our true eternal self, the Atman. This Atman is pure consciousness, unchanging and beyond the limitations of the physical world.
Wait, so you're saying we have two selves?
It is.
Whoa.
And the Gita suggests that realizing this Atman, our true nature, is the key to achieving liberation or moksha, which is freedom from the cycle of birth and death, which is also known as samsara.
Wow. So there's a lot to unpack there, but it sounds like spiritual wisdom is about understanding our true nature and our place in the grand scheme of things.
Exactly. It's about recognizing that we're not just our thoughts, our emotions, or even our physical bodies. Mm. We're something much greater, something eternal and interconnected with the universe itself.
All right. So we've got this concept of spiritual wisdom as a kind of guiding light. But how does that translate into action in our daily lives? That's where karma comes in, right?
Yes, and the Gita introduces a fascinating concept called nishkama karma,
okay,
which means action without attachment to the results. Now, I know that might sound a bit paradoxical in our very goal-oriented world, so let me explain.
Yeah, I was just thinking, how can you act without wanting something in return? That goes against everything we're taught.
It's a challenging concept, for sure.
Yeah.
But incredibly powerful. The Gita suggests that when we act solely out of desire for a specific outcome, we create attachments that bind us to the cycle of suffering.
So if we're constantly chasing rewards or fearing failures, we're never truly free.
Precisely. But when we act with understanding, you know, with the awareness that our true self is beyond the reach of success or failure, then we can act with a sense of detachment, of offering our actions as a service to something greater than ourselves.
Okay, so it's not about becoming passive or giving up on our goals. It's about shifting our perspective and acting with a different kind of motivation.
You got it. The Gita suggests that this shift is key to achieving both inner peace and true effectiveness in the world.
I'm starting to see how these pieces fit together. So spiritual wisdom guides our actions. And by acting without attachment, we can break free from those limiting desires and fears. That brings us to the third element of the trio sannyasa, or renunciation.
Right.
What does that mean in this context? Is it about abandoning everything and living as a hermit in a cave?
Uh-huh. That's a common misconception.
Yep.
Renunciation, as described in Chapter 4, isn't about physically withdrawing from the world.
Hmm.
It's about an inner shift, a letting go of our attachment to material possessions, ego-driven desires, and the fruits of our actions.
So it's about that inner detachment we were just talking about.
Yes.
But how do you reconcile that with still living and participating in the world?
That's the beauty of the Gita's teachings.
Okay.
It's not an either or proposition.
Wait,
it's about finding a balance.
Mm-hmm.
You can be engaged in the world, pursuing your goals, fulfilling your responsibilities, while still maintaining that inner detachment, that understanding that your true self is beyond the reach of worldly successes or failures. It's like playing a game. You know, you can play to win, putting all your energy into the outcome, or you can play for the joy of the game itself, appreciating each move, each challenge, regardless of whether you ultimately win or lose.
Oh, I love that analogy.
Yeah.
So it's about finding that sweet spot between effort and surrender, striving for excellence while letting go of the need to control the outcome.
Exactly. And this is where the concept of karma yoga or the yoga of action comes into play.
What?
The Gita suggests that by dedicating our actions to something greater than ourselves, to a higher purpose, or even to the divine, we can transform even the most mundane tasks into a form of spiritual practice.
So it's about shifting our motivation from what's in it for me to how can I serve? That's a pretty radical shift in perspective.
It is, and it can be a real game changer in terms of how we experience our lives. Suddenly, work isn't just about earning a paycheck. It's about using our skills and talents to contribute to something meaningful. Relationships aren't just about getting our needs met. They're about offering love, support, and understanding.
Okay, so we've got this inner shift of renunciation and this outward expression of selfless action. But I'm still grappling with this idea of liberation.
Okay.
It seems like a lofty goal, almost unattainable. How do we even know if we're on the right path?
That's where the concept of a guru or spiritual teacher comes in.
Okay.
Chapter 4 emphasizes the importance of seeking guidance from those who have already traversed this path.
So it's not just about reading books and figuring it out on our own. We need a mentor, someone to guide us.
The Gita suggests that a true guru can illuminate the path.
Okay.
Offering insights and practices tailored to our individual needs and challenges, they can help us see our blind spots, challenge our limiting beliefs, and inspire us to keep moving forward even when the going gets tough.
That makes a lot of sense. It's like having a personal trainer for our spiritual growth.
Exactly.
But how do we find a genuine guru in today's world with so many self-proclaimed experts and spiritual teachers out there?
That's a great question, and it's important to be discerning.
Yeah.
The Gita offers some guidelines. It suggests that a true guru embodies the qualities of humility, compassion, and wisdom.
Okay.
They don't seek to control or manipulate their students, but rather to empower them to discover their own inner truth.
So it's about finding someone who resonates with our values, who inspires us to grow, and who guides us toward self-realization rather than dependence.
Exactly. And the Gita also highlights the importance of honoring the lineage of teachers that have come before us.
Well,
it's about recognizing that this wisdom has been passed down through generations, forming a sacred chain of knowledge and experience.
So we're not just learning from our immediate teacher, but from a whole lineage of spiritual masters stretching back centuries.
Precisely. And this awareness can cultivate a sense of reverence, humility, and gratitude for the wisdom that's been bestowed upon us.
Okay, so we've got this powerful combination: spiritual wisdom, selfless action guidance from a guru, and a deep respect for lineage. That's a lot to take in.
It is.
I'm wondering, are there any specific practices or techniques outlined in Chapter 4 that can help us integrate these teachings into our daily lives?
Absolutely. The Gita emphasizes the importance of cultivating self-discipline, or tapas, as it's called in Sanskrit.
Ah, yes, yeah, self-discipline. That's something I think we all struggle with from time to time.
We do.
What kind of tapas does the Gita recommend?
It's not about harsh self-denial or punishing ourselves. It's about cultivating a sense of balance and moderation in all areas of our lives.
So it's about finding that middle path, avoiding extremes, and creating a sense of harmony in our thoughts, words, and actions.
Exactly. It's about making conscious choices that align with our highest values and aspirations, even when it's challenging or uncomfortable.
So like resisting that extra slice of cake.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Or getting up early to meditate, even when we'd rather sleep in.
Exactly. It's about training our minds and bodies to act in alignment with our spiritual goals.
Okay. So tapas is about building that inner strength and resilience. Mm-hmm. What other practices does the Gita recommend?
It also highlights the importance of svadhyaya, or self-study.
Okay.
This can involve reading sacred texts, reflecting on our experiences, and engaging in practices that help us gain a deeper understanding of ourselves and the nature of reality.
So it's not just about accumulating knowledge, but about actively engaging with it, reflecting on it, and applying it to our lives.
Precisely. The Gita suggests that this process of self-study helps us to refine our understanding, to shed limiting beliefs, and to cultivate a more expansive and compassionate worldview.
I love that it's like we're constantly learning, growing, and evolving, peeling back layers of conditioning to reveal our true essence.
Exactly. And this journey of self-discovery can be incredibly liberating.
Okay, so we've got self-discipline, self-study. What else does the Gita suggest for those seeking liberation?
Well, it also emphasizes the importance of surrendering to a higher power, or Ishvara Pranitana. This doesn't necessarily mean adopting a particular religious belief or worshiping a specific deity. It's more about recognizing that there's a force greater than ourselves at play in the universe and choosing to align ourselves with that force.
So it's about trusting that there's a bigger plan, even when we can't see it or understand it.
Precisely. And this surrender isn't about giving up or becoming passive.
Yep.
It's about letting go of the need to control every outcome, to micromanage every detail of our lives.
Right.
It's about trusting that we're being guided and supported, even when things don't go according to our plan.
That sounds incredibly freeing. But imagine it takes a lot of faith and courage to truly surrender.
It does. But the Gita suggests that this surrender can bring a profound sense of peace and clarity.
Okay.
When we let go of our ego's grip, we open ourselves to divine grace and guidance.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Spiritual wisdom, selfless action, renunciation, guidance from a guru, self-discipline, self-study, and surrender. I'm starting to see how these teachings form a comprehensive path to liberation.
Exactly. And chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita provides a framework for integrating these teachings into our lives, offering us a roadmap for navigating the challenges and opportunities of human existence.
This has been an incredibly illuminating deep dive so far.
Yeah.
I'm eager to see where we go next and how we can apply these teachings to our own lives.
Me too. In the next part of our deep dive, we'll explore some specific examples from Chapter 4 and discuss how we can practically integrate these ancient teachings into our modern lives.
Welcome back to our deep dive into Chapter 4 of the Bhagavad Gita. I'm still processing all this wisdom we've been talking about.
Yeah, there's a lot, isn't there? But even as we've been exploring these concepts, we've only just scratched the surface of what this chapter has to offer.
Right.
Chapter 4 also dives into the different paths to liberation or yoga.
Okay, the paper mentions Jnana Yoga, Karma Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga.
Mm-hmm.
Can you break those down for us and how they connect to the themes we've been discussing?
Sure. So think of them as different routes up the same mountain. The destination liberation is the same, but the approaches vary.
Go great.
Jnana Yoga, the path of knowledge, emphasizes the cultivation of wisdom and discernment.
Okay.
Much like what we discussed with spiritual wisdom earlier.
Right. So it's about realizing our true nature
yeah.
through deep self-reflection, study, and meditation.
Exactly. Now, Karma Yoga, the path of action, focuses on performing actions selflessly without attachment to the results. Remember Nishkama Karma. It's putting that principle into practice in every aspect of life.
Okay, so it's not just about the actions themselves, but the intention and awareness behind them.
Precisely. And then there's Bhakti Yoga, the path of devotion.
Okay.
This path emphasizes cultivating love and surrender to a higher power, that Ishvara Pranatana we talked about.
Right. So it's about finding that deep connection with the divine through practices like prayer chanting or simply cultivating an attitude of love and gratitude in daily life.
Exactly. And what's fascinating is that Chapter 4 suggests that these paths aren't mutually exclusive. In fact, they often complement and enhance each other.
So it's not about choosing one path and sticking to it rigidly. It's about finding what resonates with us and integrating elements from different paths to create a practice that supports our own unique journey.
You got it. The Gita emphasizes that the path to liberation is not a one-size-fits-all approach.
Right.
It's about finding what works for us and adapting these teachings to fit our own individual needs and circumstances.
Okay, so we have these different paths all leading towards the same goal of liberation.
All right.
But how do we navigate the inevitable challenges and setbacks along the way? Life can throw some curveballs, you know?
It can. And that's where the teachings on resilience and perseverance come in.
Okay.
The Gita reminds us that the path to liberation isn't always easy. There will be obstacles, temptations, and moments of doubt.
So it's not about avoiding those challenges, but learning to navigate them with grace and equanimity.
Exactly. The Gita encourages us to cultivate a warrior spirit, not in the sense of aggression or violence, but in the sense of courage, determination, and a willingness to face our fears and overcome obstacles.
Okay, I like that. So it's about embracing the journey with all its ups and downs as an opportunity for growth and transformation.
Precisely. And the Gita reminds us that we're not alone on this journey. We have the support of the divine, the guidance of our teachers, and the companionship of fellow seekers who are facing similar challenges.
Right, we talked about the importance of finding a guru and honoring the lineage of teachers who have come before us. It's like we're all part of this vast spiritual tapestry, each thread playing a unique role in the grand design.
Exactly. And the Gita encourages us to approach this journey with a sense of humility, gratitude, and reverence for the wisdom that's been passed down to us.
Wow, this has been an incredible deep dive.
It has.
I feel like I've gained a whole new perspective on the Bhagavad Gita and how its teachings can be applied to my life today.
Me too. It's amazing how these ancient teachings can still speak to us so powerfully across the centuries.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up, what's one key takeaway you'd like to leave our listeners with?
I think the main takeaway is that the path to liberation, to true freedom and fulfillment, is available to everyone. It's not a destination we reach, but a journey we embark on, a process of continuous growth and self-discovery. Mm. The Bhagavad Gita, particularly chapter 4, provides a map, a guide, and a source of inspiration for that journey.
That's beautiful. So, dear listeners, may this deep dive inspire you to explore the Bhagavad Gita and discover the wisdom that resonates with you. Until next time, keep seeking, keep questioning, and keep the journey of self-discovery alive.